You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order, please? I see. The special it is. We'll be there to deliver ASAP. Pizza Podcast, Special Delivery. Hello and welcome to your special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I'm Paul and with me today is...
Dan in the UK.
And Sean in Canada.
And today we have a special, very special episode. We have a special guest with us. Now today we're going to be talking about DVDs, 90s films, 80s films... maybe even before then. We're going to be talking about DVD rental stores. You may have heard me talking about this on previous episodes, because I do tend to talk about it quite a lot, is that I have a local DVD rental store, which is just 5 minutes walk down the road. And I am reliably informed by its owner that it is one of only two in the country that are left. Gone are the days of the big multi-conglomerates of Blockbuster and other such places that I can't think of. We only have two in the country left, and I've been walking distance of one, and that's great. So I thought I'd pop in and ask the owner of that store if he'd like to come on and have a chat, thinking, yeah, well, he owns a DVD store, we'll have a chat about that for an hour and then that'll be that. And then I started digging around a bit more and found out he had a website, which is an excellent website if you like blogs about writers, cameramen, anybody and anything, that, you know, directors, obscure films, anything like that. Go on there, have a read of it. It's great. It's called, if I find it, theschlockpit.com. That's theschlockpit.com. Some great stuff on there. But really what triggered all of this was... on the Facebook page for Snips Video, which is the our local DVD store, up popped a post saying, I have a DVD here of the Replicant. It's a limited edition, and it has a nice little thing inside. So, okay, I'll pop along and I'll grab one of those and have a look at it. So I went up, grabbed the DVD, played it. It was a decent film. Got me thinking, and you know, thought, oh, yeah, okay, it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme and Michael Rooker film from 2001. Thought, yeah, okay, that's nice. Opened it up, and out pops a little booklet, and inside the booklet was two interviews, one of a writer of The Replicant and one of the cameramen of The Replicant, all done by the owner of Snips, Dave Wayne. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hello.
Well, I thought you were just some sort of humble, DVD rental store owner, but turns out you're this absolute passionate film buff.
I don't know about that, but what you should have said was that you opened up the booklet to find two interviews conducted and edited by myself and my writing partner, Matthew Budrevich, and then you played the film and listened to our audio commentary, and then after the audio commentary, you watched the documentary that we produced, the feature-length documentary on the Blu-ray. And then you should have said that it's a complete overdose of the guy from the video shop, and I'm never going back there again.
There is a slight problem with that, is that I got the DVD, I played it, I watched it, I thought I haven't really got time to watch all the behind the scenes stuff. I totally missed the fact that there was an audio commentary by yourself and your writing partner Matty, whose second name, how do you pronounce that? Because I can't pronounce that.
Three syllables. Budrevich.
Budrevich. Right. Okay. I've got it written down, but I struggle with words like that.
Yeah, and you do get these. don't know if you've ever seen them on YouTube, but they're quite a horrific phenomenon that seem to be just growing exponentially. Whenever a Blu-ray comes out by one of the boutique, you know, film companies like Stream Factory or Arrow Video or 88 Films, they make these unboxing videos. I don't know if you ever encountered them. If you haven't, you must go through it. They're fantastic. Well, they're awful, but they're gripping in a kind of morbidly curious way. And it's just a guy, always a guy, with a newly purchased Blu-ray, and it's literally him taking the shrink wrap off, reading the special features on the back of the box, slipping it out of the slipcover, and then going through, you know, the various aspects of it. Oh, it's oblong, and oh, it's shiny, and oh, there's a disc inside. And there's so many of them. There's about 6 foot or 7 for every major, you know, thing that came out. But of course, because we've done so many now, I remember when I think our last one, Moon of Scorpio, came out. And again, it was just these poor guys trying to pronounce Matty's name. And everyone pronounced it completely differently. And most of them give up. But, you know, at least they're trying, I suppose.
I didn't even try it. Because I just gave up before I even got there. I thought, there's no way I'm going to get this. I'll have to ask him how to pronounce it first. So that was a bit of a thing. And I thought, well, okay, let's look a bit more into this. And if you go onto Amazon, you find it on Amazon. It's a 3,000 disc limited edition with a fold-out poster, a numbered slipcase, audio commentary by yourself and Matty, which I totally missed. The feature-length documentary, of course. Where are we? And the booklet, which you interviewed Ross Clarkson and Lawrence Riggins. How did that come about, then?
I emailed them and said, do you want to have a chat? it's really unglamorous. I wish it could be more interesting, and I wish I could tell you this great anecdote about, well, actually. But no, it's rather boring, to be honest. It tends to feature me sitting at a desk with a laptop and saying, you know, we've worked with 88 Films for 4 years now, and I don't, for those of you who don't know, 88 Films are kind of one of the premium manufacturers, distributors of Blu-rays in the UK. They've got two major ranges of films. One is the Slasher Classics Collection, and I know, Paul, you're a big fan of slashers. and then you've got the European cinema collection, which tends to focus on Italian films and that. But we've worked on for about 4 years. We've worked on a number of films. And a couple of times a year, we tend to get a message or an email from 88, and they say, well, what would you like to work on next? So we just tend to pick a film, and then we get carte blanche to do whatever we want, whether we want to go and make a documentary about the film, whether we want to do an audio commentary, a booklet, or whether we just want to... I mean, for Moon in Scorpio, for example, which is a horror film that came out in 1987, we got in contact with one of our real idols, a great film director by the name of Fred Olen Ray. I know that you're familiar with his classic Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers. And we managed to speak to him. And we got him to record an audio commentary for us, like we did with Legionnaire, the Jean-Claude Van Damme film. Legionnaire, we got the director, Sheldon Lattich, to record an audio commentary for that. So we tend to have sort of carte blanche to do whatever we want, and we just use our contacts to, you know, speak to these people and see if they'll talk for 90 minutes about their movie. So yeah, it's not particularly glamorous, but yeah, it's good fun. It keeps me off the streets.
I thought you were going to say something like, well, you know, I got my people to get in touch with his people, and we set a date, we had lunch, and all this, but no, yes. Sit down in front of a laptop.
If you want to rewind, we can edit that bit. We can edit that bit out. I'll try and make it sound more interesting.
But that's amazing. I thought you were just some humble store manager, and there you were with this secret life hidden away.
Just the lonely counter jockey sitting on a stool behind a counter. That's all it is.
So where does your fascination for films come from? I mean, have you always been watching films since you were a kid and sort of grown up with it, or is it a more adult thing? Or?
Far from it, to be honest. To begin with, I thought I was sort of invited on the wrong podcast because I've never seen a Star Trek movie in my life.
What? Say that again?
Yeah, I've never seen anything Star Trek related in my life. The same goes for Star Wars or anything like that. I am the strangest film fan you will ever know, in that I shun every key, you know, life-defining, era-defining movie you can ever imagine. You know, I can run through the films I have not seen, like Indiana Jones, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, et cetera, et cetera. I've never seen those films because my childhood, until I was 16, 17, I didn't watch any films. And that, you know, I just avoided it. And suddenly, when I sort of turned 17, 18, my dad had the opportunity to buy the stock of a video shop, which was situated next door to where I work now. The guy was retiring. He was a video butcher in the respect that he did videos and he was a butcher. and the tape used to smell of meat, like sausages, like raw sausage. It was quite something. I can still, you know, think back and, yeah, the stench. So one day I was summer holidays, and there was suddenly 300 to 400 VHS sitting in my dining room. And being a bored child, I gradually, you know, thought, well, let's have a look at some of these. And I worked my way through them, and suddenly I thought, well, actually, I quite like these things. So that was like 20 something years ago, and I started to like films. But prior to that, I've never really had any interest. But from that moment on, from that moment when I was 17, you know, every day I've just consumed vast quantities of films, but probably stuff that no one else in their right mind would watch.
So you watch them in the shop as you're going about your business?
No. You need total focus. So you're always at home, you know, not vast quantities, but, you know, probably 10 films a week. So, you know, 500 a year, something like that, which isn't any great shakes, but, you know, they soon add up.
And you still haven't got around to Star Trek. Man, oh man.
See, people tell me it's good. People tell me it's good. So if they say it's good.
Guys, is it good?
For number five. Okay, number five. What mentioned number five?
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to the haters. It's fine. It's a fine movie.
There are very well qualities here, the 13 of them.
Yeah, because tell you what, one of my customers, I've had two customers in the past 3 weeks who have gone through the whole series of films. And I've kind of almost been a little envious of them when they've rented them. And I've thought, you know what? I kind of envy you, you know, taking these films home for the first time or just a rewatch. I sort of think, what am I missing? I should really, you know, have a look at these. But then you get another job and that takes like a month of research. So you never really get around to these things. So one day, they're there, aren't they? You know, they're in the shop. So I'm not going anywhere. It's not like it's Netflix.
Yeah, well, it might, exactly. If it's on Netflix, it'll disappear within a year, and you'll never see it again. So you had no interest in films up until that point, I'm trying to think back now, because obviously I can't quite remember the original store being there, mainly because, ironically, probably around about that time, I lived at the other end of Cross Lane, so I was on Heath Road, literally just the end of it there. So I was again for about 5 minutes walk away in the other direction. But we never used to go to Cross Lane a great deal, which is where the store is. We always used to shop elsewhere. Now that we've moved over here, which is only half a mile away from where it was originally, and the other side of the store, we've started going a lot more. Over the last few years, obviously, we've been because we can get things that we can't find on TV, or if they are on TV, you've got to miss them, so you don't get a chance to see them again. And this is before really sort of Netflix was taking off and all of the streaming services. The only way you could get it was to like illegally download if you could find somebody who knew where the websites were and all this type of thing. But even then, you'd struggle with internet speeds not being quick enough and all this. So it's always better to go along to the DVD store that was still there, not realizing that everywhere else around the country these things were disappearing. So how is it that you're still going and you are one of the last two in the country? I mean, you've obviously got a good fan base, a good customer base, but yeah, why I mean, are there still distributors out there that are, you know, that will come along and say, oh yes, here's some videos for your store, or is that drying up and that's why people can't get them?
It's a mixture, really. I mean, we're well established. You know, if you have a well established business, you know, more than a startup, then you're always likely to keep on going. We have 12,000 films, almost 13,000 films, which is, you know, people can't just do that. People just can't, you know, open a shop tomorrow and stock it with that many films, because you can't get that many films these days. So many films are going out of print so quickly. As I say, we've always been an arbiter of, always been a purveyor of choice. We've always thought, well, choice is the most important thing in anything. And just that the whole idea of giving people, because that's the funny thing, we get people coming in every week asking, one, why are you still here? Two, what do you actually do in here? I don't get it. And three, people just come in and say two words. They say Netflix. And I think that's sort of the strange assumption, and the fact that people sit at home and you stick Netflix on. I got Netflix, we all got Netflix. But you stick it on and you think, well, if you don't know films all that well, you presume, oh, well, Netflix is everything. That's all I need. But it's a minuscule amount. I mean, we have 4 to 5 times as many films as Netflix. I mean, there's a great statistic that says, I don't know if this is still correct, but at the time, 2019, Netflix had 88 films made prior to 1990. Just think of 88, that's barely a shelf. In the biggest movie platform in the world, and they have a shelf of films from 1915 through to 1989. I mean, that's an embarrassment. And I think it's just that sort of that desire to ensure that films survive, because we're on the verge of welcoming a generation of kids, and older than that now, people 25, 30, 35, that they just don't stumble across stuff anymore. They don't stumble across stuff on, they don't show good films on TV anymore. They don't stumble across, you know, pick a box and think, oh, this should be all right. They just press a button, give it 20 minutes, and if it's no good, they forget about it. But, you know, if you pick something up, if you have a tangible object in your hand, you're more invested in it. So there's a great danger of sort of leaving behind a generation of kids that never discover sort of great films anymore, and it's really, really worrying.
That's a good point. I mean, because when we go into the store, there's the DVDs, and you pick them up and you think, oh, you know, that looks okay. You read the back. You get a little synopsis at the back. And, okay, and, oh, maybe not that one. You pick another one up. Oh, this one looks good. Yeah, read the back. Yeah, that's the one I'm after. But, of course, with Netflix, all you do is just keep swiping across, swipe across, swipe across. And all you're looking is at the covers. And you don't really know what the film's about. And it's very easy to go, oh, it's got her in, that's got him in. And just flick through them all. Like you say, something tangible in the hand, you can read about it and you can spend time in the store browsing. It's so much better. And you've always
got... It's a conversation as well.
Yes.
You know, it's a conversation as well, isn't it? I mean, when you return a film, you've seen the film. Maybe you want to talk about it. Maybe you've just seen Usual Suspects and you want to talk about Kaiser de Soze. If you don't live with anyone that's film-orientated or you live by... then you've got no conversation. You can go on the internet and speak about someone in a forum for whatever. But to speak face-to-face about a film and to show enthusiasm and excitement and that kind of thing, you know, it's really valuable. And I think we'd miss that if we didn't have it.
Well, that's right. I mean, when my wife went in the other day, she came up to you and said, you know, what do you recommend? What's the latest sort of chick flick type film that, you know, that might be interesting? And straight away you came up with a few. You know, off the top of your head. I mean, I couldn't think of any that have come out over the last couple of years. And, you know, you've got a great encyclopedic mind. And if somebody comes up to you and says, oh, there was a bloke in this film who had red hair and, you know, had a moustache, and you're there going, oh, yeah, that's him. You know, it's great to have that ability there rather than scrolling through IMDb.
It's great not to have the... You know, I don't do anything else, quite frankly. I don't do anything else. You know, I don't play sports. You know, I just watch films. I don't play sports. I don't go to the pub. I don't have friends. I don't do anything. I just, you know.
You're my new hero, Dave. You're my new hero.
Sounds perfect. Sounds absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Here we are all sat in front of the TV talking to each other about sitting in front of the TV watching films.
That's right. Perfect. That's right. So your store has 13,000 films with multiple copies of each?
No. We only have multiple copies of the brand new films. And even today, I mean, this year we've bought very few multiple copies because there's just been a complete erosion of cinema releases. So we're pretty much at the moment single copy store. But that's fine because I'd rather have variety than depth. I'd rather have, you know, a choice than, you know, 10 copies of the new Tom Cruise film.
How big is this store? Like, what's the size of this
building? Tiny. It's just, it's up to the ceiling, you know. It's up to the ceiling. You'll need a ladder to get to some shelves. But why not? It doesn't get in the way.
Well, it doesn't help when you're like me, 5'3", and I can only get the kids' stuff off the bottom shelf. Dave's about what? What are you, Dave? About 6'4"? 6'3", 6'4"?
I don't know.
Your dad's about 6'6", so they can get the stuff off the top shelf. You know, that's fine.
Well, I know I'm going to get you a set of grabbers for Christmas then, Paul. That's your Christmas present.
And let's take a quick break there for a promo of another podcast on the ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
Join us this winter as we watch changes in the DC Universe unfold. We'll keep you informed on DC news, we'll review the future state event, and of course, we'll be talking the Arrowverse shows when they return this January.
Thanks for letting us be a part of your DC Comics journey, and thanks for listening to the Earth Station DCU podcast.
Part of the ESO Network!
Well, there's nothing I miss more than browsing the video store on the weekend. So when I do eventually take a trip to the UK, Paul, and stay in your guest bedroom, you got to take me down to this store, and we got to spend some hours there.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We'll get some really obscure films. I must admit, he's only let me down twice, and I've had to order those DVDs from abroad somewhere to get them in, but they were really obscure.
From some broad?
Like some broad, yeah.
Who was that?
Some films about some broads, that's the one.
Oh, okay. So you have encyclopediatic knowledge of most films, would you say?
No, absolutely not. Terrible memory. Terrible memory. Just lucky. No, okay. I just make myself look good somehow. But I'm not.
what are the formats that you have? You have just DVD? Do you have Blu-ray? Do you have Laserdisc? Do you have VHS?
No, we keep it simple. We've got about, I'd say, 11,500 DVD and about 1,500 Blu-ray.
Okay.
I don't pick up the Blu-rays for the cinema releases. The Blu-ray audience where I am tends to be for the boutique films, you know, the old classic films that have been restored and bathed in special features, you know, labels like Arrow, the ones I mentioned before, Arrow, 88 Films, Eureka, Indicator, these great companies that bring out these lavish sets of fantastic forgotten films. Yeah, so they tend to be on Blu-ray.
And do you buy, sell, and trade, or just rent?
No. As I say, we keep it simple. Anything on the shelf, you rent, nothing to buy.
Okay.
Because you don't want to get rid of stuff. I mean, the value of DVDs is nothing today. It really is. Well, I don't know how things are for you in Canada, but we have a sort of secondhand company here called Music Magpie, who tend to buy secondhand films for cash. They have a great TV advert which promises that you'll get rich and be able to go out and buy like a Ferrari with your takings. But you know, they pay you about 10p for every DVD, or maybe 5p. So that's the value of the film. So to buy them would be manic, to be honest. And we just tend to hoard. We want to hoard because, like I say, there's a great danger of so many films going out of print, and there's not the people left. There's not the companies left to make them again. So it tends to be a situation that once they're gone, they're gone.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I used to work for the NME. Over here in the UK, we have a company called CEX, otherwise known as SEX. who you bring in, you could bring in a whole bag full of DVDs, which are, you know, manky, horrible, they haven't been well kept, and we would just trade you back a pittance for what they were. There was no sort of respect for what they were. And obviously the price changes. If we've got 20 million, like you say, Tom Cruise movies, the value of the amount of money we would give you would be less because our stock is too high. Do you find that because you've got the rarer types of movies, because they are perhaps a print that hasn't existed for so long, that you attract a clientele who are a bit more respectful of the DVDs themselves, that they take care, almost like with the vinyl resurgence, where people were becoming collectors and there was more of a, it was more of a different market. Do you feel that that's changed in some way?
Yeah, there is. I mean, you'll always get the child who takes home a copy of Frozen and brings it back with, you know, dripping in gunge and sticky fingers and all kinds of stuff. I mean, that's always going to happen. But yeah, there is a real growing clientele of hardcore film aficionados who, I mean, they know what we are. They know what we have. I mean, some of our films are, they cost, I mean, we're getting two box sets in on Monday. One is a box set of Colombian noir from Indicator, which has six really rare noir films that were released in the 1940s. And that's got a face value of £50. We're also getting in a box set of William Greff films, who's a really niche Miami-based filmmaker, made a lot of exploitation films in the 1970s. And there's a box set of his films coming in on Monday, which again is £50 plus. So these people know that for a couple of quid, they can rent these films and bring them back a couple of days later. So they know the value. They know if they went to the shops to buy them, it would cost them, you know, a remortgage on their house. But luckily, you know, we're here and we can supply them for pennies. So yeah, they're respectful. They're good people.
And that's the thing that amazes me as well. You just said that you're renting them out for pence. You're not joking. I mean, a kid's film is a pound to rent. But not adult film in the sense, you know, a normal film is £2.50. A box set is £5. I mean, it's not huge sums of money. So, I mean, how on earth are you staying afloat? Because surely, I mean, every time I go in there, there's one or two people in there. It's very rarely crammed full of people. I know in these days, unfortunately, because we're still in the COVID situation, you can't get more than a couple of people in there at the best of times. But you also sell cards and helium balloons as well. So how on earth are you making money? I'm amazed that it doesn't seem a great business model. But obviously, you say you're established. But, you know, how on earth do you do that?
I live in a shed. I wear warm clothing. I eat beans, mainly. You know, frugal person. No, I mean, we do other things. We do other things. We have other things in the square footage of the shop that we're able to do other aspects. I mean, you know, other retail ventures. So the DVDs and videos, while I take up half the store, the other half of the store is another retail business as well. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't be going. So the DVD side is pretty much, it's a break-even thing. You know, we don't make money on it. But we're not there to make money on it. We're there to be a library of films that, you know, people can't get. That's all I care about. Loss maker. I've got other things. We do other things that make money. I just want the DVDs to stay there. And that's the important thing. As long as they stay there and people got access for as long as I'm here, then that'll do.
That's amazing, because even the, like you say, you sell birthday cards and greeting cards, all the usual sort of cards. If you go into a local supermarket, they're £2, £3 a go. In Dave's store, they're like 70p, 80p, £1.20 at the most. It's an amazing place. We don't go anywhere else for cards now, we just go there. It's ridiculous. And you can walk there as well. That's good.
Very convenient.
Yeah. Sean can't walk there.
No. Not from here, at least. But I would, because we have nothing like that here.
So as I say, the distributors obviously still, I mean, they still turn up and deliver your DVDs every week or
No, that's gone. That's long gone. That's long gone. I mean, when I first you know, came to work alongside my dad. My dad should be retired because he's I think he's still alive anyway, but yeah, he seems to be. But he is that old. He's that old. I no longer know. You know, he should be retired, but we are that busy. And when I first came to the company, which was 17 years ago, we had guys in you know, private registration cars dropping off DVDs and T-shirts and free films and our baseball caps and posters and big card, you know, the ones you see in cinema, the big cardboard cutouts and everything. They'd be like, oh, here you go. But now, I mean, that went about 7 or 8 years ago. No one exists like that now. So now it's pretty much down to me. I can get whatever I want, which is fine, which is the way I like it. I can go wherever I want. I can buy whatever I want, and I can get the best price. So, I mean, that's the way I like it. I don't want to go back to the way it was, where you were paying £50 plus VAT for one copy of one film. And then on day three, someone would buy it by the Mangala tape or they'd steal it. I don't want that. I want to pay, you know, pennies for a DVD and for it to do fairly well. That's fine with me.
So what would happen if you know, you had one of these, like you say, the classic films, like, off the top of my head, Vertigo or something like that, and somebody brings it back and there's a huge scratch down it and you no longer have the copy of that? I mean, could you source another one, or is it that's it, it's gone?
I mean, it's not an ideal situation, and it's never happened. I mean, people, the common denominator about people stealing films is they tend to steal really, really bad films, which is fine by me. You know, they'll take, you know, Air Bud 3 or something, or you know, and that's fine. You know, they pay. You know, what did someone steal the other week? By steal, I mean they rented it and they had no intention of returning it. I think they stole Four Weddings and a Funeral or something. So they paid £2.50 they paid to not return Four Weddings and a Funeral, and I could repurchase it for £1. So I made £1.50 off the thief. So I thought, yeah, I'll steal what you want. Go ahead and steal. That's fine. Just make sure you steal bad films. But no, if they took something of the boutique, I mean, I was looking the other day. I've got a gorgeous, I know it's not your cup of tea, Paul, I've got a gorgeous Hellraiser box set, which was released by Arrow a couple of years back. It went out of print in no time. And I saw a couple going on eBay for £200 plus. And you think, well, if something like that vanished, then, you know, I'd probably cry and you know, I'd probably shut the shop for a week just in a period of mourning. But I don't know. But that's the thing. The people that take those films, you know them, because it's so rare. I mean, 95% of people, they just want Jason Statham. You know, they just want Chris Hemsworth. They just want someone in spandex doing whatever they do. I don't know. But there is a niche of people, a real clique of people that, you know, they want something special, and you get to know them because they're more your people than the sort of, you know, modern day box office stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing, absolutely amazing. I feel so you know, blessed and privileged that we have, you know, this store just on our doorstep, and it's in you know, one of the best areas in the UK. You know, it's we've got everything around here, including our own DVD store. I mean, that's just incredible. So the only other one that you know of is in Bristol, I believe.
Bristol, lovely people, 20th Century Flicks. Yeah, they've got more than us. They've got 22,000 films, VHS as well, and a cinema, and a couple of one-screen tiny box cinemas that they rent out. Because, like I say, you can't survive on DVD rental alone. And yeah, they seem to be doing all right. I don't know them that well, but yeah, it's good to see. And like I say, they specialise in the films, and you know, they featured in The Guardian. They featured in, someone made an awesome short film about them recently called The Last Video Store, which I had to point out was slightly an incorrect title. But yeah, they do really well, so it's good to see. And they're also, you know, about 300 miles away, so they're not really our competition. But you never know.
It's your nearest competition.
Yeah, like I said to Sean before we started, you know, there are shops that do still rent DVDs, But it's in a quantity that's, you know, it's like it's a corner shop compared to a great big hypermarket. You know, they're dabbling. They've got 100 or 200 DVDs, and they're stocking the latest. But I think us and 20th Century Flix are pretty much the last two in the country that, you know, where you can rent some fairly crazy films.
Excellent. Absolutely excellent. So what things have you got lined up at the moment? I noticed on your website, is there a book in the offing here?
Well, we've done a couple of books at the moment. We had one came out. We were invited to contribute to a John Carpenter book, which was authorized by himself. So we contributed a guest essay to The Nonconformist Cinema of John Carpenter, which was a really cool book by Troy Howarth that came out last month or the month before. And currently we're writing two books. One is a biography of Gary Graver. I don't know if you're familiar with Gary Graver.
Nope. Can't say I am.
No. Gary Graver was Orson Welles' right-hand man for 15 years, from 1970 to 1985. He was his cinematographer, and he pretty much followed Orson Welles around the world, wherever he went. So, you know, a fascinating guy. However, Gary Graver also made a lot of very fascinating films. So we're writing this as a threesome. And one of the things that Gary was most famous for was he was one of the best director of hardcore pornography. Legendary. I mean, this is in the golden era. The golden era of porn, which was 1975 to 1984, he made some of the most amazing films and some of the most well-respected films, stuff like Amanda by Night, Peaches and Cream, things like that. So for the last 6 months, I've been watching a great deal of pornography and writing about it.
The classics.
For money. I'm being paid to write this. We've got a biography of Gary Graver, which is coming out next year, which tells his life story and also goes over his key films. And then all the while we're writing our opus, which is a book that'll be so big you'll fall over it. It's called Schlock and Awe, Two More Forgotten Films of the 90s Rental Realm. And that kind of looks at, you know, if you take yourself back to the 1990s, it's a strange time because you've got hundreds of thousands of video stores all around the world. And they're getting fed a crazy amount of films that never even saw the inside of a cinema. All the time, week in, week out, direct-to-video films all the time. But then it kind of, a little bit, at the end of the decade, 98, 99, and of course there was the advent of DVD a couple of years later. Now when DVD came around, people said, well, how about these films that came out in the 90s, these direct-to-video films? What's going to happen to them? No, be fine. They'll all come out on DVD. They'll all come out on DVD. Don't worry. Nothing will be left behind. But they were. So we're faced with over 2,000 films that came out between 1992 and 1999 that have never seen the light of the day since. They're rotting in some scrap heap of VHS. And some of them are really good. So we're going through 2001 of these films. We're chatting to the directors, the writers, the cinematographers, the actors, everyone involved in all of these films, and it's going to be this great bible of a decade of films that no one really cares about, apart from us.
Well, that sounds like an awesome book. I would read that.
It's a true labor of love. That
you may have to read it in about 10 years' time, but
it'll take you 10 years to read it as well. That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, like you say, I mean, and that's just a decade. I mean, I'm sure you could pick another, you know, any other decade and have the same same quantity. I mean, the decade after.
Yeah.
What would be your favourite style of film then? Do you have a genre that you like?
No widely accepted genre. The only sort of made up genre of films I like are the orphaned children of genre filmmaking. So be it action, comedy, sexploitation, horror, anything like that, any genre of film, but it has to be below the radar. It has to be no one or very few people can be aware of it. They're the type of films that really excite me. Films that no one has talked about, no one's written about, but they exist. And some of them have got great filmmakers, great creative people attached to them. But, yeah, they're the type of films that really do entice me.
So do you have, I guess you must have some kind of computer index of all your films, but do you know off the top of your head everything that you have in the store? Like, can you, if I threw out a film name, would you be able to say if you had it or not?
Yeah, I don't have a computer, by the way, in the store. I don't have a computer. Everything is brain. No customer database, no DVD database. Everything is memory.
Wow, okay.
Failing memory.
Okay, here's one. Do you have Cherry 2000?
Yeah, it just came out on Blu-ray actually last year by a really cool company called Signal One. Who's the guy that directed that? It's a guy that did another film a year later that was really culty as well, wasn't it? I've forgotten the guy's name. But he did a couple of films. But yeah, Trade 2000 was about 1987, was it?
1987, yeah, exactly. In 1990, a film came out, and it's Dolph Lundgren. It's got two names, either Dark Angel or I Come in Peace. Do you have that?
Yeah. Craig R. Baxley directed that. Great director.
That's awesome.
covered a lot of his films. But these are my cup of tea. These are, you know, this is like fishing in a very, very friendly pond right now. Because then my Craig R. Baxley did some great films. He did a really cool Stephen King adaptation called Storm of the Century, which is a two-part TV event that was very cool. But yeah, that Dolph Lundgren film is great.
Because nobody's ever heard of it that I have ever asked. And I loved it. I watched it so many times as a kid, but nobody knows about it. And I can't find it anywhere.
Excellent film. Oh, really? Oh, it's good. It really is good.
Do you have a copy of the 2010 film Rubber?
About the tire, yes. I recommend that to a guy. I recommended that to a guy about last year, and he took it home. This kid took it home to watch with his parents. His parents came in the next day, and they said, "What did you recommend to my son?" but in jest, you know, they loved it. They loved it.
Oh, it's amazing.
I've got to come in. I've got to get that one. I've got to get that one. Was it one of you two guys that recommended it? Was it you, Sean?
I did. I recommended it. I talk about it all the time.
Yeah. I've got to see that film. I watched the trailer and I thought, I have got to see this film. It looks amazing.
It's amazingly ridiculous. I love it. I don't know how many times I've seen it.
It turns around to look at somebody at one point. You think, you're a round circular rubber tire. How can you be turning around to look at somebody? It's incredible. Oh, yes. Next time I'm in, I'll definitely get that one. And as you can see by my background there, we're halfway through season two of Lost, which we have obviously rented from Dave. So, oh my goodness, I'm really, really, both me and my wife are really into it. It's exactly our film, exactly our TV series. Good. Lots of little callbacks, lots of things to spot in the background, numbers galore, and really good. Really, great characterizations as well.
Excellent.
So, yeah, can't wait to get through that lot.
Hey, Dan, throw out a film.
I honestly can't think of anything that's unheard of. I'm pretty mainstream. I'm very bright. I'm very boring.
Steven Spielberg's first film.
Oh, Sugarland Express. Well, Jewel. Are you talking about
Jewel? Yeah.
Sugarland. Yeah, Jewel. Yeah, I've got Jewel on Blu-ray, and we also got The Night Gallery, which of course was Rod Serling's great TV show that he made. And that has Steven Spielberg's first TV piece, which is a really great story. I think it was season one, episode one. That's very cool indeed. About 69, 68.
So you have a lot of TV series as well then?
Not as much, because there's just no market for it. But we're trying to pick up some classic TV, you know, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, things like that. Rod Serling stuff.
The Lieutenant from Gene Roddenberry?
No.
I've never seen it either, but it's one of his first things that he did. So,
right.
But I did see a copy of Crossroads to Crime. I think it's called. And that's a very rare one. I actually spotted it. I thought I must get that one out as well. It's Gerry Anderson's live action film, one of his rare live action films. So I've got to get that out. Spotted that on your shelf. We've asked as much as we can ask, really. Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on to talk to us. It's
it's an amazing, amazing business model you've got. It's really great that you're still going after, well, was it 17 years? You still. What, so one question before I go. Why is it called Snips?
Obvious answer. We used to sell ladies' clothing.
Okay.
No, that's true. Right. We did. We started in 1975 selling ladies' clothing. And it was always a very sort of British phrase that if you saw something cheap or for good value, you say, that's an absolute snip at that price. So, you know, it was something that my mum christened because she thought, well, snips means good value, that kind of thing. And because it's sort of, it's kind of been on the checkbook ever since, we thought, well, why bother changing it, even though it doesn't fit with the DVD at all. But yeah, so since 1975, that's how it's been. And yeah, 45 years later, we're still operating under the same name.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Thanks very much, Dave. Thanks for coming on. Been terrific talking to you. Actually, great, A, to talk to you for a length of time rather than just a quick, you know, what do you think of this film? B, without a mask as well, because the last few times we've seen each other, we've been masked up. And I wish you all the luck in the future. I hope you keep going for a lot longer because basically I want to watch a lot more films. There's loads on that shelf that I want to get through.
Just for you, Paul. Just for you. We'll just keep going. Just for, if you're the last customer, then you know we'll still be there with your copy of The Big Bus that you requested. That nobody has rented since. Nobody has rented since.
Oh no.
We've still got The Big Bus.
That's a classic.
We'll put it in our Paul Wright memorial section.
along with Rubber. With the next one. That's fabulous, The Big Bus. Oh, yeah, thanks for reminding me about that. That's a great film. I'd advise anybody who's listening to this that lives in the area of Bebbington, please go and rent that. That is a cracking film. Disaster movie based on a large bus.
We're still showing a negative negative income on that one, so if we can turn it into a profit someday, then yes. But otherwise, Paul gets the bill.
I thought you were going to say I was going to get the DVD then.
No.
Yeah, you might as well. You bought the thing. Thanks again, Dave. That's been absolutely great.
Pleasure.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, you know, hopefully you didn't... No one's asleep yet, anyway, out of the three of you, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It was one of those times where I actually genuinely forgot we were recording a podcast. I was just listening to a guy just being interviewed. I was just watching this. I was part of the audience.
Or is this better known, being Sean?
Yes. I turned it up a notch for Renee this time.
Oh, great. Okay, well, we'll let you go, Dave. Obviously, it's 10 o'clock over here, so we'll let you get to bed or watch a film or whatever you're going to do.
We're recording a commentary on Saturday for a DVD release, so I'm prepping. I'm researching till the wee hours, so don't worry. But yeah, thank you anyway.
That's what I wanted to ask. What was the most famous person that you've interviewed or commentaried with?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really do famous people's films. no one really. You know, people that I speak to has always been, God, that's really disappointing. Yeah, but sorry, I can't even think of anyone that I could blag, no one I could really lie about. I've done people I really admire and people I really like, but there'd be people that literally like six people have heard of. But that I think is sort of the king of the world. Like there's an Aussie guy called Brian Trenchard Smith. You've heard of him? Brian Trenchard Smith?
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah, of course you do. And he made some of my favorite films. He did the Nicole Kidman one, BMX Bandits. You ever seen that?
Never even heard of it.
I heard of it, but okay.
So Brian Trenchard Smith is this sort of amazing Australian exploitation filmmaker, born in Britain, and he's one of Quentin Tarantino's major influences. Quentin Tarantino cites him as being one of his heroes, and so you know, to speak to him on the phone for a couple of hours was an absolute delight. But no, other than that, loads, hundreds of people, but barely anyone that most sort of sensible people will have heard of. Most people with a life and with activities and with friends and family will have heard of, but you know. But I'm happy, you know. I don't care.
Well, I mean, I'd be happy if I was locked away in a shed somewhere, just eating a can of beans and watching porn all day. I'd be well happy.
Yeah, I know. I'm moving. Not bad, moving
blind, is it? Blind, but I'd be happy. Well, I think that's about it, Dave. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on to talk to us. It's an amazing, amazing business model you've got. It's really great that you're still going after, well, was it 17 years that you're still... So one question before I go. Why is it called Snips?
Obvious answer. We used to sell ladies' clothing.
Okay.
That's true. Nice. We did. We started in 1975 selling ladies' clothing. And it was always a very sort of British phrase that if you saw something cheap or for good value, you say, that's an absolute snip at that price. So, you know, it was something that my mum christened because she thought, well, snips means good value, that kind of thing. And because it's kind of been on a checkbook ever since, we thought, well, why bother changing it, even though it doesn't fit with the DVD at all. But since 1975, that's how it's been. And yeah, 45 years later, we're still operating under the same name.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Thanks very much, Dave. Thanks for coming on. Been terrific talking to you. Actually, great, A, to talk to you for a length of time rather than just a quick, what do you do this film? B, without a mask as well, because the last few times we've seen each other, we've been masked up. And I wish you all the luck in the future. I hope you keep going for a lot longer because basically I want to watch a lot more films. There's loads on that shelf that I want to get through.
Just for you, Paul. Just for you. We'll just keep going. Even if you're the last customer, then we'll still be there with your copy of The Big Bus that you requested. That nobody has rented since. Nobody has rented since. We've still got The Big Bus.
That's a classic.
We'll put it in our Paul Wright, memorial section.
along with rubber. That'll be the next one. That's fabulous, The Big Bus. Oh, yeah, thanks for reminding me about that. That's a great film. I'd advise anybody who's listening to this that lives in the area of Bevington, please go and rent that. That is a cracking film. Disaster movie based on a large bus.
We're still showing a negative income on that one, so if we can turn it into a profit someday, then yes. But otherwise, Paul gets the bill.
I thought you were going to say I was going to get the DVD then.
No.
Yeah, you might as well. You've bought the thing. Thanks again, Dave. That's been absolutely great.
Yeah, pleasure.
That was fantastic. Yes, thank you.
Yes, awesome.
So our special is gone and the grease in the box is cold, and we hope you are full to the brim. So join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
There we go. That's a show.
That's it.
Or, as we say in the movie business, that's a wrap.
Been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you'd like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@hotmail.com, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.